AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. AgriTalk is brought to you by Simplot Grower Solutions, a partner you can grow with. Learn more at SimplotGrowerSolutions.com. Sometimes markets find the path of least resistance and just, you know, take it. In fact, you can argue that's what they do every day, even if the direction of that path doesn't make much sense. And when that happens, sometimes you end up at a spot that's kind of hard to explain.
From Souter Monday via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we will talk with Arlen Suderman from StoneX. Right after the news, Jack Scoville from the Price Futures Group. And in the final segment, Kerry Artek from Artek Advisory with a view on the technicals. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. And now, here comes the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
All right, Davis. Thank you so much. Hey, the weather's trying.
It's trying.
Mid-50
yes, it
and
is.
The sun is shining.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll take it. I guess
it's a little like an oil painting, you know. You look at
it.
It's really nice to look at.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you try to get inside of it and you just find yourself disappointed and in some cases, you know, accosted by museum authorities. But with the weather, it's a little different. It's where the analogy breaks down.
Yeah. I got you, man. Yeah, until you walk outside, there is a little bit of strength to the sun if you can get out of the wind, but that wind is mm-hmm. is a
yeah.
bit chilly still. I understand that if it was, you know, early March instead of or March 12th and instead of April 12th, that'd be a different story if we didn't have a few 70 degree days under our belts already, but
right.
here we are.
Right.
It is what it is,
yeah.
man.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, we'll deal. You know, tomorrow's another
we'll
day.
We'll deal. Yep. Boy, the profit taking hit the hog market today, Davis.
Oh man.
It got pretty ugly for a period of time and that's one of the paths of least resistance that we can identify in the markets today. The other one is over in that soybean trade. Good grief. Mm-hmm. Once the selling came into the market, it was hard to shrug it off. It was persistent in the selling pressure in that bean market today. So we'll find out what's going on there from Jack.
Yeah, cotton had a rough day too, if I'm looking at it now.
Oh, yeah. Cotton did have a rough day. The old crop Ooh. Down more than 200 points. The new crop down more than 100 points. So, yeah, it was kind of a rough day all the way around. Wheat was trying early, but, you know, even wheat couldn't do much today. All right, let's go ahead and get
despair
to it.
Despair is creeping up on me here.
Yeah.
After a three-day rally to end last week, July softwood futures failed to trade higher today. Spillover pressure from corn and soybeans limited buying interest. Export inspections of wheat in the week ended April 8 totaled just over 458,000 metric tons. That lined up with trade expectations, but that was down from the previous week. Traders this week will focus on cold temperatures moving into areas of the hard red winter wheat belt, and we'll be watching for any sign of rain in the northern plains and Canadian prairies. July hard red winter wheat, 7.5 cents lower today, 586¾. July soft red fell 9¼ to 631¼. September spring wheat, 11¾ cents lower, 655¾. Chip.
Yeah, it's going to become a weather game for the most part in this wheat trade, but we also have to keep a real close eye on global competition, global stocks. Last week in the supply and demand report, we've got stocks going in the right direction, but we've still got way too much wheat out there around the world.
December corn opened higher and pushed to a test of buying interest above $5 in the overnight session. The lack of upside momentum sent prices lower and threw support at Friday's low. The contract did bounce from midday lows, but remained below the opening range. Tough growing conditions for Brazil's Safrina corn crop and cool, dry conditions in the U.S. are expected to limit selling pressure. Export inspections of corn in the weekend at April 8 totaled more than 1.58 million metric tons, in line with trade expectations. May corn futures 8¼ lower, 569. July corn fell 6¾, 556. December corn closed at 496.5, least that one's unchanged, Chip.
Yeah, absolutely. And that inspections pace fell back from 2 million tons last week. But it's still well ahead of the pace that's needed to get to USDA's estimate.
Profit-taking swamped the bean market again today, pulling November beans to below the March 31 close. That's the day, Chip, USDA's prospective plantings report came out with bean acreage intentions about 2.4 million below trade expectations.
Yeah, exactly. That's the point that I was making in the open. When you sometimes end up in a spot that's kind of hard to explain, being under that March 31 close is hard for me to explain when this bean market's supposed to be trying to buy some acres, Davis.
Right. Yeah. Well, in the bean market, price pressure also came after USDA announced the sale of 132,000 metric tons of new crop bean sales to China and the sale of 55,000 tons of old and 55,000 metric tons of new crop beans to Bangladesh. Soybeans inspected for export of nearly 328,000 metric tons were in line with trade expectations. The trade news was even pretty good today.
Yeah,
May bean futures, absolutely. 21 cents lower, 1382. July down 19 and a quarter. That's 1379 on the close. November bean futures closed at 1250 and one quarter, down 13 cents on the day.
Yeah, that November contract looks to be, it's going to test that support around that 1240 area, which was kind of a staging area in the first half of March. So we'll see how it goes after that. Hit me with the cotton closes here real quick.
Sure thing. May cotton, 226 lower, 80.14. December cotton plunged 134 to 80.44. Feels like we're at the tipping point.
Yeah, it kind of does. We're gonna have to watch out for the technical momentum in that market here for sure. Yep. All right, we'll get to the livestock when we come back in the next segment. Jack Scoville, Price Futures Group. How you doing, Jack?
Hey, doing great. Enjoying a Monday here in Chicago.
Yeah, and the grain market's had a case of the Mondays, that's for sure. I have a hard time understanding why that November bean contract feels like it needs to trade below the March 31 close, Jack.
Well, I think it's just being dragged down by the front months. The May was sharply lower, and the November followed. They still moved the spread about 7 cents or so, pretty big move there. But just kind of interesting that we need to see selling in the entire thing, given that even though we have weakening demand, we really don't have a whole lot of beans to sell anymore, and we should be getting some support pretty soon. I view this as a speculative selling spree. The fund's probably going at it, probably will tomorrow, maybe on Wednesday, but I doubt it, and then you can buy it again.
Okay. All right. Are we starting this similar trade in the lean hog trade today, Jack?
Well, the hogs have been up. It's a demand market, and it's a demand market in the grains as well. And, you know, you're going to get retrenchments every once in a while. And it just sparks new buying interest down the road, which is a good thing for hogs. The hog demand has been, or the pork demand and the beef demand have been really, really good. Yep. Every once in a while, the market takes a little breather, goes down a little bit, checks out support. And as soon as we do that, we'll probably bounce off the support pretty good and make some new highs.
Gotcha. All right, Jack. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, sounds great.
All right, buying the dip, Jack Scoville. That's what it sounds like we're looking to do in the grain markets and especially in the hog market. Okay, when we come back, Davis will have the closes for the cattle and hog market, and we'll get into the conversation with Arlen. You might already know that Poet produces 2 billion gallons of bioethanol and 5 million tons of high-protein Dakota Gold animal feed each year. But did you also know that Poet uses the same process to produce a suite of other bioproducts, like purified alcohol for cosmetics and sanitizing products, renewable CO2, and oil for renewable diesel? The market for green products made from crops harvested right here in the Midwest is growing at an unprecedented rate, and that means even more reliable domestic demand for your grain. Farmers aren't just feeding and fueling the world. They are growing sustainable solutions that protect the environment and preserve our way of life for future generations. POET believes in the power of agriculture to meet the world's most pressing needs. Learn more at poet.com/products.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Bayer Plus Rewards, helping make every part of your season more rewarding.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. We're going to have a conversation with Arlen coming up here in just a moment after Davis finishes up the news with the livestock.
Sure thing, Chip. Well, expectations of higher cash cattle bids, limited pressure in cattle futures. June live cattle, 47.5 lower, 122.10. October cattle slipped 17.5 to 125.52.5. May feeders were up 7.5 cents to 149.70. June lean hog futures touched 110 this morning, triggering a round of profit taking that created a vacuum to the downside that took prices limit down. Futures managed to bounce a bit ahead of the close, but remained sharply lower. May lean hogs were $1.97.5 lower at 104.40, and June hogs fell 280 to 106.15. You should be ashamed of yourselves, hogs. Chip, now over to you.
All right.
I'm indignant.
Thank you,
over
Davis.
Here. Absolutely astonished.
Let's bring in Arlen Suderman from StoneX. Arlen, how are you? Jeez, Davis is scolding the hog traders out there after today.
Yeah, that's the kind of emotions you get with this kind of volatility that sometimes defies logic.
That's right. That is
Arlen,
exactly.
I find that very validating. Thank you very much. This is like psychology. Yes, thank
him.
You.
It is your day there, Davis. Good for you. Good for you. How are you, Arlen? Everything good?
It's good, Chip.
Good. Glad to hear that. What do you make of the way that the market traded today? I'm talking specifically about soybeans, and I'm going to ask you the same question to kick things off that I asked Jack. Does it make sense that Novi beans are under that March 31 close?
Well, to kind of borrow from a line that we've heard before, it's not your grandfather's market anymore. And it's a totally different dynamic in these markets. We've added $4.3 trillion to money supply over the past year due to fiscal and monetary policy. We have a whole new generation of retail investors who have zero-fee trading on their apps on their phones. A lot of them are getting into the commodities. They became famous with GameStop, but they're getting into the commodities as well. A lot of that money is also ending up in funds that are invested in the markets. And we have expanded position limits that are 60 to 80% larger than what they were a couple of months ago. This is the type of volatility we're going to see. We're going to see markets that behave illogically, in our opinion, from time to time. And as the old saying goes, they can stay illogical longer than you can stay liquid if you're speculating in the market.
You know, those Robin Hood traders, Arlen, they're going to find out real quickly that commodity trading is different than stock trading, aren't they?
They are. That's sometimes painful lesson for them to learn that, but I've noticed a dramatic increase following me on Twitter over the last few months and asking, frankly, very naive questions about the commodity. So you know they're retail traders, and you know the market's got to take their money before they learn a lesson. Yeah. And in the meantime, we're going to experience this. But there's still a lot of that money that's an institutional investor. Surveys showed that based on just the last set of stimulus checks going out, over $100 billion of that was expected to end up in the markets. And so this is part of that volatility.
Man, oh, man. And then the other thing that you mentioned there, Arlen, was the increase in the position limits for the speculative traders and the trading funds. I kind of expected that was going to have – I thought that it was going to bring support to the market because they were long, and this meant it just simply meant that they could come in and defend those previous long positions and build up the profits in it. But it doesn't feel or seem to have played out that way.
Most of that money is traded by computers, not humans. the majority of it is. And so when you get a day when the intra-minute, shall we say, signals turn direction, then the money flips and amplifies the move in that direction. We've done a lot of work with these momentum signals here in our office, and it doesn't take much to start flipping them, and the money starts piling in behind it. So you're just going to get these big swings, and the bigger the position, the more power behind it. Ultimately, price is still a function of supply and demand in the end, but it can take a long road to get there. It sometimes doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Okay, all this money that you detailed that has been coming into the market, and some of it coming into the economy there, I should say that. Some of it ends up in the market. But there just seems to be no end in sight to the supply of new dollars out there, Arlen. What is going on?
Yeah, it's really what a lot of people in Washington are starting to buy into, and that's modern monetary theory. And that is that we can micromanage the economy and the government, meaning the fiscal, meaning Congress, can spend as much money as it wants because it can be backed up by the Federal Reserve. And right now we have a former Federal Reserve chair who worked alongside the voting members of the Federal Reserve, who is now Secretary of the Treasury. So there's that bond between them. And the theory is that they can totally control the economy. Congress can spend as much money as it needs to, and the Federal Reserve can simply print the money necessary to do that. And if inflation starts to get out of hand, they can simply increase taxes to control that. And as long as they have GDP growth above inflation, they can continue to do so. And that's the theory that they espouse to, and why they plan on just continuing to pump money into it. And we're seeing some of the effects of that on the markets.
Yeah, I think we are. Shouldn't we be looking to the energy markets for the first sign that that is building up, that inflationary pressure?
Well, that's a fair question, and we did see that. In fact, the energy markets were among the first sectors to really respond to this. We saw the rally of crude oil over the past year, and the negative $42 negative a year ago in April. But then it rallied to what, almost $68. Do the fundamentals really justify $68 crude oil when we had 7 million metric tons being held off out of the system? 7 million tons, 7 million barrels per day held off the system by OPEC, and U.S. was also not at full capacity production. You could argue a lot of the reason we were at $68 crude oil was simply because of money coming into the system. Now, it got a sharp correction lower, and we've dropped back a little better than $10 as we started to realize that maybe we got ahead of ourselves fundamentally. And we're seeing some of those corrections in the grain and oil seeds as well. But frankly, we have been seeing those inflationary pressures in food and energy. And of course, the Fed doesn't consider inflation in food and energy part of inflation. They pay attention to the PCE price index that excludes the food and energy sectors. And yet food and energy impact inflation in almost every other component. So, you know, does this mean that we're going to soon have 10% in a CPI, you know, consumer price index at 10%? Not necessarily soon. I don't think we can predict when it's going to happen, but the odds of it happening are very high. It's just a matter of timing, and when will that timing be, and in what sectors will it be? And that's going to flow to the sector that has the best case or the best story at the time. And there have been times over the last year that energy was the best story. There were times that the grain and oil seeds are the best story. Mm-hmm. There are times when the proteins and the meats were the best story. But overall, it's been coming into the commodity sector.
Right, right. Consumer confidence and the growth there, the improvement there, you think, does it feel justified? Is that part of the reason that we're seeing some strength in the crude oil?
Yeah, one of the keys to this is the velocity of money. That's mm-hmm. how many times does a dollar cycle in the economy? And we've been seeing that trend lower in recent years because we have the baby boomer generation, which I'm at the tail end of it, as either in retirement or moving toward retirement, so saving more and spending less. And then you have, and when COVID hit, velocity money just plummeted to its lowest levels since the 1950s. So we have all this money into the system, but not being spent. Now, it's not being spent because of a lack of confidence. When the first stimulus checks went out a year ago, they went to pay down credit card debt and just kind of hold on to that money, increase savings until we knew what was going to come out of the COVID shutdowns. And then as we started learning more about the economy, we started spending it more, but still, velocity of money is low. If that ever picks up and yep. gets back to where it was, we could have rapid inflation.
Yeah, and that's when it really gets reflected in the ag commodities. We're having a conversation with Arlen Suderman from StoneX. When we come back, let's talk about the balance sheets. Where are we heading on carryovers?
Farming in the 21st century requires data-driven technology and product decisions that are rooted in on-the-ground insights. At Simplot Grower Solutions, we're in your fields and by your side to help you grow yields and profits. Simplot is a pioneer and innovator in plant nutrition and agronomic science. Our local experts offer grounded advice to help you get the most out of every acre. Go to SimplotGrowerSolutions.com to see how we can be your one-stop resource. Simplot Grower Solutions, a partner you can grow with.
It's time for headline news featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing Today. Brazil's Safrinha corn crop needs a drink. Brazil was mostly dry during the weekend with temperatures very warm. Brazilian producers are taking advantage of high prices with aggressive forward sales. China raises the price floor for wheat auctions and restricts participation. The Russian ag consultancy ICAR has raised its estimate for Russian 2021 wheat crop from 79.8 million metric tons to 81 million tons. Powell sees a pickup in economic growth ahead. Inflation is expected to accelerate this summer. The Dakota Access Pipeline to remain open during environmental review. And the box beef values continue to soar, up 167 for choice on Friday. Give ProFarmer a try at tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
On the farm, somebody with a truck and two. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. We are having a conversation with Arlen Suderman. Before we get back to that, Davis,
yes.
Recap how the markets close, please.
Chip, July hard red winter wheat 7 1/2 cents lower today, 586 3/4. July soft red fell 9 1/4 to 631 1/4. May corn futures 8 1/4 lower, 569. December corn closed at 496 1/2, steady today. May soybean futures 21 cents lower, 1382. November bean futures closed at 1250 1/4. That's down 13 cents. May cotton 226 points lower, 80 14. On the livestock side, June live cattle 47 1/2 lower, 122.10. May feeders up 7 1/2 to 149.70. And Serenity Now, June lean hogs fell 280 to 106.15. That's your quick market recap. Now back to you, Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Arlen Suderman's with StoneX. Arlen, I want to talk the demand side here for just a little bit here. The corn loadings in the first week of April backed off from the pace that had been very close to roughly 2 million tons a week, fell off to under 1.6 million today. Well, at least that's what we think. We'll get the revision next week and see what the revision says. But it's a bit off the pace. Is that concerning?
It's concerning, but it's still enough. And we've been seeing a little bit of volatility in these numbers. Overall, it's still a record pace. It was a seven-week low at 62.4 million bushels, to put it in bushel terms.
Yeah.
What we need to have on a weekly basis to hit USDA's target is 55.1 the rest of the marketing year. So we've been above that for quite some time now. Shipments to China, though, are falling short to where they need to be. And they need to be at around 25 million bushels per week to ship everything that China has bought for the current marketing year. And they've been running around 15 to 18 million bushels per week here just in recent weeks. We do expect that to pick up in April and May. And they have overall picked up, but they're still not where they need to be. We're seeing strong non-China shipments. But we need China in there, and that's one reason I kind of held back on my export target. If China were to take everything, we should be at about 2.85 billion bushels of exports for the current marketing year, and I just don't think we're going to do that. I think we're going to – I think it's not so much a desire of the will as it is an inability to China to get enough ships cycled enough times at the same time they got all the soybeans coming into the port in order to do it. The problem's more on their end than it is on our end.
Yeah, it's logistics is what it feels like. And the demand, what you're saying is the demand is real. It's not like they wouldn't take it if they could. The demand is what real, isn't it?
Well, the soybean demand that emptied our shelves prior to this and then they went to South America was real. That is getting pulled back now because African swine fever, and that's more of a concern for the next marketing year, although lower acres offset that right now. The corn demand is real right now because I believe China thinks, based on what chatter we're hearing on the ground in China, that we're going to have a short Safrina corn crop and a short Midwest corn crop this year, based on what the climatologists are saying. And therefore, there's going to be a world corn shortage here in the months ahead, and they're trying to get it acquired while they can to rebuild their reserves. If, in fact, Brazil ends up having a much better crop than we currently think, and the U.S. has a good growing season, they may back off on taking shipment on everything. But as long as they have that fear, they're going to try to take shipment as fast as they can.
Okay, couple of things to detail there. What is the situation with ASF in China?
ASF in China is obviously much worse than what the government is saying. I spoke with our team there in China this morning and trying to, again, get somewhat of a handle on the situation and where it's at. Our best guess is that they had rebuilt the hog herd to about 80 to 85% of pre-ASF levels a few months ago. But then the disease really started hitting again, and now we're back down to 60 to 65%. You could say 60 to 70% of pre-ASF levels. It's really hard to get good numbers. But one thing we do know is soybean crush ought to be closer to 2 to 2.2 million metric tons per week. And it's only 1.4 million metric tons this past week. That's the pace that it's been. And it's not because of a shortage of soybeans. Soybean stocks are 29% higher than they were at this time last year. Okay. So, and the first of that big armada of ships coming from Brazil have started to arrive. And they're going to, now as we get in the middle of the month, they're going to be receiving 2.5 million metric tons per week from Brazil. So we're going to be backing up soybean supply, and soy meal supplies at these lower crush levels are still building. And so that gives you an indication. It's very similar crush to where we were a year ago. But a year ago, we still had not rebuilt from African swine fever. We had partially rebuilt, but we were still way down, and we were in the pandemic lockdown as well. So this is not good to see that kind of crush. We're seeing corn prices start to back off now as well.
Okay. Now let's talk supply side. Do you believe what the Chinese believe about the U.S. corn crop?
Well, first of all, the smaller acreage makes weather that much more important this year. Yep. I do think those acreage numbers will go up by June 30th, but we'll have two WASDE reports between now and then using the lower acreage numbers. is the climatologists that I talk to, and we work with various ones, have increased their odds. You know, normally they'd be saying odds of a Midwest summer drought are about 18%, and they vary now between 60 to 65%. Now, that's 35 to 40% odds that we won't have a drought, but those are significant odds, particularly when stocks are this snug. Not only domestically, but globally. If you take China off the world balance sheet and you take the U.S. off the world balance sheet, what's the status of the rest of the world? It's a 35-day supply, assuming Brazil has a normal Safrinha corn crop. That's the tightest in 20 years. There's not much margin for error, and particularly if that error is in the United States in adverse weather, we got a big problem. And so there's a lot of chapters to be written yet for these markets.
Yeah, it certainly is. Certainly is. You know, it felt like we were going to have a running start on the planting season this year, and when that happens, it typically leads to more corn acres. I don't know if the I don't think we can call it a running start anymore, Arlen. Do you?
No, I don't think so. With the cold weather moving in, I think farmers are doing everything they can to get out as quick as they can. But this cold really cools down the bullish embers for in there. I do think, though, if the month of May is good, that we will add a few more acres. I still feel good about my estimate of 92.85 million. I think that's a possibility that we could hit. And soybeans, anything short of 90 million really means we've got to have a good crop, unless China fails to get a handle on African swine fever. We think that they will quicker this time because they are more commercialized. They know how to manage it. They haven't yet, but it's still early in the process. But we think that that'll happen. If they don't, then we probably have enough acres.
Yeah. Yeah, 90 million acres of beans planted with a record yield on it doesn't fix our supply problem, does it?
No, in fact, if you... with the acres that USDA said in March 31, and I put in a trend yield that they're going to be using in May, we have to ration about 100 million bushels of demand for the coming year just to hold stocks where they are. And my corn stocks end up at the same level a year from now as what they are now as well. So we need a few more acres. We have no margin for error there for adverse weather.
Well, and the distribution of the acres this year, Arlen, it feels like maybe that's going to make it tougher to build that yield because we're moving acres out of Iowa, Illinois, and into other areas.
Absolutely. When you look at where the pre-plant acres were from last year and the conservation reserve acres that came out off of contract to be planted, that's where we get our acres. And those are heavily focused around the outskirts, so to speak, of the Midwest, largely in the plains, some in the south. And that means you pull your yield down a little bit. You have a little bit of yield drag.
Right. Okay. So with all that in mind, tight supplies this year, tight supplies next year, ought to make that 22 crop worth something. How do you market in this environment, Arlen?
Well, first of all, I got to say, we've learned a lot over the last year about how quickly black swan events can come.
Yep.
So don't take anything for granted. I believe in scaling in, build your equity and then protect your equity. And that means scaling in as we go little by little and hope you sell the rest for more, but protect your downside, protect the equity that you do build into your farm.
Yeah. Yeah. And try to maintain some pricing flexibility. In other words, are you using put options or a cash sale re-ownership? Does that stuff make sense?
There's a lot of the over-the-counter type products out there that your grain resellers can offer that give you a floor under your market but give you some upside protection and for very little cost at all. And, it's worth calling around and checking into what's available at your local grain buyers.
Right. Gotcha. We're out of time, Arlen. It's always a pleasure to have a conversation with you, my friend. Be well, and we will talk with you again soon.
Look forward to it, Chip.
All right. That is Arlen Suderman from Stone X. Yeah, that pricing flexibility is something that, as you know, we've been talking about it a lot here on AgriTalk, and we're going to continue to talk about it because it just feels like this is the kind of year, especially when you look at the 21 and out to the 22 crop. It feels like that kind of a year that it demands that flexibility.
I don't know what you're thinking. So call us at 855-4-TALK-AG and tell us what's on your mind.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. You know, Davis, in 2018-19 marketing year, we ended up with a bean carryover of 909 million bushels.
Okay.
And here we are 2 years later, we're looking at 120. Mm-hmm. That's how, mm-hmm. and 120, it's not going to be, the number may say 120, but it's not going to be 120. It'll be something under that.
Sure.
And then just go back to a year, about a year ago, we were talking about the current marketing year ending up with a carryover of 3 billion bushels. And here we are, mm-hmm. cut that in half plus some. It's just absolutely amazing how things have changed, and it changed the chart outlook. There's no question about that. Kerry Artak, Artak Advisory, is with us. How you doing there, Kerry?
I'm doing great, Chip. Thanks for having me again.
You bet. You bet. Yeah, don't forget, everybody, if you want to get a visual take on what we're about to talk about, go to Artak Advisory, A-R-T-A-C, Advisory. There's an AgriTalk link. Just click on that and it'll take you to a video. All right, Kerry, what do you got?
Well, I'll start with May corn. You know, I actually talked about May corn last week. I'd like to stay on top of what could be kind of a new midterm buy signal that has not played out yet. I want to emphasize that. But I just think it's good to update on a week-by-week basis. And that's still 579 even above the market. That's a 50% mm-hmm. upside retracement from the 2012 high against the 2020 low about a year ago. On the way up, 50%, 579 even. We've tested it a few times over the last couple of months, most recently last week. I do like to see 1% violation thresholds, which would take us to about 585. And in fact, if you look at that video that I put out on the website, I have 585 and 3/4 as kind of a near-term channel top. So bottom line, 579 even up to 585 and 3/4, that, you know, 6-7 cent range of resistance can absorb buying into May expiration. Let's just call it through spring. And from here, the market could fall back to 503 1/4 over the next month or two, which is our base of support that can absorb selling through spring. But if you take a look at the big picture context, last December, we had a long-term buy signal above 465 1/4, what I'm calling our new floor of long-term support for the broader corn market, and above which 645 3/4 remains essentially a one-year objective from last December. And so if we were to close this week, Friday, above 585 3/4, then I think that 645 3/4 target is likely to be realized within about 2 to 3 months, where the broader corn market can actually top out for the year itself. But until then, we remain susceptible to falling back to 503 1/4 between now and, say, the end of May. On to May wheat. I did this a couple of weeks ago on the show, trend defining speed line support. I've got that charted out on the video as well. It's risen to 602.5 for this week. It is our base. It is our floor of support really into summer trade and into later year, and above which the broader wheat market remains stable, even bullish. I'm anticipating 734.5 over the next 3 to 5 months or so. On the way up, 664 1/4 can contain weekly buying pressures, and that is an accelerator into May trade. So if we can close above 664 1/4 over the next few weeks, then that 734.5 3 to 5 month target is likely narrowed to within 3 to 5 weeks. 734.5 able to contain buying through summer. Now, downside, if, and I'm not expecting it, but if we do close the week Friday below 602.5, we actually have just the opposite. May has indicated a good longer term high, probably for the rest of the year, because then I would expect 3 to 5 months bearish continuation down to 482.5, where the broader wheat market can bottom out through the rest of the year. And finally, June lean hogs, thought it'd be worth mentioning once again. We closed down today pretty significantly, 106.15, but 100.30, about another six handles south. The market encounters a long-term floor of support. We settled above about a month ago, holding above 100.30. We should over the next, I'm still saying 3 to 5 months, which would put us into summer. 134.92 remains a long-term target. On the other hand, if we close Friday, the week itself, below 100.30, that is a failed long-term buy signal, which I think should then yield 87 even over the next couple of months. But until then, 100.30 is your sort of stick your neck out buy zone, and above which 134.92 remains a summer objective. On the way up, 116.65, likely out of week this out of reach this week, but possibly over the next few weeks. 116.65 can contain buying through May trade, and if we settle above it, it should accelerate that 134.92 target to within just another couple of months, where the broader lean hog market can place an annual high. That's all I got, Chip.
Good stuff. Good stuff, Kerry. Thank you so much, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, sir. Take care now.
You bet. Kerry Artak, Artak Advisory. And the thing about that rally that's happening in the hogs, it's got that upside momentum that Kerry was just talking about, but it's a demand market. Mm-hmm. You know, that's one of the things that impresses the heck out of me, is that it's being driven by not just export demand, but domestic demand as well. So lots going on, a lot going on in that hog market.
You know, so technical selling on a day like today may not really be that much to get too excited
I think Jack used the right word at the start of the show. A bit of a reset.
Okay.
And that's really, I think, the best way to describe it. I think that's what happened in beans today. Mm-hmm. It was a reset. It bothers me that November, and I said it, it bothers me that the Novi contract settled below the March 31 settlement. Yeah. And the reason that bothers me is because that's the day of the prospective planning report. Since we got that number, the market's mission has supposedly been to attract a few more acres. Well, we're not doing that. No. We're not doing that. National Weather Service 6 to 10 day for April 18 through the 22nd, and the 8 to 14 day for April 20th through the 26th calls for below normal temperatures across the Corn Belt and below normal precipitation across the Corn Belt. The extended outlook, that April 20 to 26, does have some above normal temperatures starting to push in from the west. So maybe that's a sign that things will warm up at the start of the new month. All right, thanks for listening today. Tomorrow morning, Nebraska Ag Director Steve Wellman and Pro Farmers Jim Wiesmeyer right here on AgriTalk.